It's Long Talk
Radio.
Look, this isn't a Romulan labor camp. I don't have to answer your questions. I don't give a damn what you think.
Welcome to On Point with your co-host. That's me, Don Allen, and Mr. Ron Edwards. Mr. Ron Edwards, we're broadcasting live from the McIntosh Studios, downtown Minneapolis, overlooking the city attorney's fine facility there. Mr. Edwards, how are you?
Fine, Mr. Allen, and excellent day, if you will. Here we are in the month that celebrates the birth and unfortunately the death by assassination of the beloved Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And yes, we can see the Lincoln Building, which is the facility, modern building here in Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis, that serves as the fortress for the city attorney's office of the city of Minneapolis, which has placed itself in a significant controversy, if you will. We want to take this occasion very quickly, Mr. Allen, to kind of update our both domestic and international audience. This has been a tough week here in the United States. It was just a week ago today that we were talking in terms of the massacre in Tucson. 6 killed, at least 12 to 13 wounded. The figure did increase by Wednesday. No one else perished, if you will. The Congresswoman, Gabby Giffords, visited by the President of the United States about 48 hours ago, has made a miraculous recovery. Many are talking about that. Arizona, city of Tucson, if you will, on the lips of everyone, and there have been a couple funerals, and of course, the story that and the tragedy, unfortunately, that has captured the attention of America and the world is the death of the 9-year-old child, which we also reported along with other news mediums this time last week. 9-year-old Kristen Taylor Green, just a beautiful young lady, just elected to her student council. Coming to the event, a meet your congressperson on the corner kind of thing, to take a look at a living legend, if you will, an icon, young Miss Green, talking in terms of the things she wanted to do in government. That whole tragedy, if you will, many saying the president handled himself extremely well, doing memorial services at the University of Arizona there in Tucson, if you will. Even conservatives, some conservatives, though I was kind of taken back in closing by some of the so-called liberals like Gergen, who is oftentimes profiled. He is a political consultant for CNN, as you know. I was disappointed within minutes after the president concluded his remarks that Gergen was talking about this is not a very compelling moment. The president didn't necessarily rise to the occasion of John F. Kennedy or Ronald Reagan or Harry Truman or Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and I was really disappointed at it because I thought the president did an excellent job in attempting to heal the nation and to stop us from imploding, because clearly this country is on the verge of something serious. So we just want to continue to offer our prayers here from On Point to the survivors and to the victims and to the citizens of Tucson.
Exactly, and our prayers go out to those families, friends, and co-workers out in Tucson. Well, Mr. Edwards, we've had a very interesting week here, last 8 days here in the Twin Cities, and I think that we should probably dive right into that and get some of this stuff off on the table and invite the general public to call in. Just so you know, our calling numbers are 1-877, or you can just 877-572-4288. Again, the calling numbers were On Point. It's 1-877-572-4288.
And for our international audience, do we need the? Oh, that's right. We do not include the 800. We were made aware that we do. For our international audience, toll free, the 800 number needs not be used. Merely dial the 1 and the prefix, as Mr. Allen has just indicated. Mr. Allen, what is going on? Article Star Tribune this morning, and then your news organization has been carrying exclusive video of a very rancorous, almost violent meeting of the Council on Black Minnesotans, which normally is never heard from on anything. Could you kind of walk through us? What's going on here?
Well, you just mentioned the article in the Star and Tribune that was titled Randy Satin, former state rep, uninvited to speak at the King Day celebration, and that was by the Council on Black Minnesotans. But we have to go back to Tuesday the 11th to discuss this. On Tuesday the 11th, before a long time, I had wondered what was the position on the Council on Black Minnesotans, or the public policy, as they like to put it, or their engagement with the general community. And, you know, I'm native of Minnesota, born and raised here, and I've never seen them in my 40-plus years present, articulate, call a press conference to any subject about anything involving the Black Minnesotans. So I was going over there on a kind of an investigative mission to their board meeting held at 2233 University Avenue, where their headquarters is, right off Vandalia 94.
Right over there by KSTP Channel 5.
Yeah, right down the street there, yes.
Okay.
To kind of just see, you know, what these meetings were about and what these people did on behalf of the African-Americans or Black Minnesotans, whatever you prefer. And I was shocked, Mr. Edwards, when I arrived in the meeting. I had sat there quietly and kind of listened to what was going on. And toward the last 15 minutes of the meeting, we had an outbreak of some a woman who had worked very hard in the mental health field asking, you know, the director, had he talked to a state representative, Hayden, about her white paper report? And he then replied that, yeah, he was in his office, stopped by his office today and said they're not done with the reviewing her report. And Mr. Edwards, we have a caller calling, and I want to get this caller online. Hello, who am I speaking with, caller?
Hi, this is Zach McTwire calling in. I got a few minutes here, but I'm going to listen for a few minutes to some more comments from you and Mr. Edwards, and then if you could come back to me, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. So just stand by there. We're not going to even put you on hold, so if you need to break in, that's okay. But Mr. Edwards,
right,
getting back to what was going on, I was in this meeting, and like I said, this young lady was talking about how hard she had worked on the report, and, you know, if the Council on Black Minnesotans kept building these templates and not acting on anything, then why are they there? What are they doing? So this kind of broke out into a screaming match with the chair, Martha Holton Dimmick, who is also the Minneapolis City Attorney, Lissa Jones, who
assistant city attorney.
Assistant
we want to be transparent. She is an assistant city attorney in the criminal division, as I understand it.
Yes, she
and
is.
And is an African-American woman, am I correct?
Yes, you are correct, sir.
All right.
And also Ms. Lissa Jones, who is the executive director of the African-American Family Services. And we'll get to some more information on her a little bit later here in the show. And I would like to play, Mr. Edwards, one of the first recordings of what I called, you know, a rancored discussion and argument and infighting among this council who has virtually done nothing for Black Minnesotans. So if I may, I want to play that first.
Go right ahead. Let's hear it.
On your committee, I would suggest that you discuss it with the people on your committee. I'm not going to turn this into a fight, okay?
Madam Chair,
the point is done.
All
the board, and we're going to move on.
Madam Chair, can I
say something? No, you cannot.
We're going to move on. We can move on, but I just think that It's out of the scope of leadership.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, that was the first tape, and the woman you hear saying, we're going to move on, we're not going to turn this into the argument, is the assistant city attorney, who also happens to be the chair of the Council on Black Minnesotans.
And by the way, just for what we call judiciary note, I noticed that she used her lawyering skills when she told the African-American woman that she was disrespecting from the chair, that it is duly noted. That is a term that is basically reserved for within the courts. Judges basically do that when you have made an objection relevant to a particular point or issue at trial, and you object, and the judge overrules your objections and said, yeah, okay, it's duly noted, you know what I mean? So Martha was using some of her legal skills to suppress. Now, I noticed, if I could critique very quickly, I was not at the meeting. I have been watching and looking at the video that's been posted by IBN. The woman in question who was being disrespected was very respectful. She asked, she talked in terms of Madam Chair, and immediately I hear the chair silencing her, being very arbitrary and capricious with respect to, you know, really stripping the – and by the way, the woman that was being disrespected is a fellow board member. Am I correct? She is also
correct.
A member of the Council on Black Minnesotans?
You are correct, Ms. Shirley.
And she has a right under Robert's rules to exercise her right to make inquiry because the issue had to do with clearly misrepresentation with respect to an important document that should be within the archives of the council. So right from the get-go for our audience, both domestically and internationally, it was quite clear that the chair was extremely hostile. And what is disturbing to me, Mr. Allen, I know you will get into that, is that the issue was one of mental health. And at a time when that is a great debate in our country based on the tragic situation in Tucson a week ago today, the issue of mental health and et cetera, I'm just appalled that the Council on Black Minnesotans would reject any discussion on the issue of mental health here in the black community.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. And part of this, Mr. Edwards, and I've talked to this woman offline and in detail because I want to find out a little bit more information about what was going on. And before I move on, I'd just like to give a little narrative on this. There was an important piece written by her alone where there was supposed to be a committee kind of sitting down as a think tank on behalf of black Minnesotans and putting this mental health piece together. And so she did not get any help from one of her colleagues, Lissa Jones, who had volunteered to help her. She didn't get help for it. She actually did it by herself. It was then given to the executive director to bring up to State Representative Jeff Hayden at the state capitol. And so she had wondered for weeks what was the outcome, what was the disposition of this paper that she worked on. But then again, she also scolded her fellow members by saying that, you know, you guys, you know, if we're going to create templates like this for the black community, we need participation. We need to initiate these templates because if we don't, we're not doing any good. Mm-hmm. From that point on, it grew into a hostile atmosphere. And I would like to play the next.
Go right ahead. Let's do this. This okay. is crucial.
If you'd like to discuss, I'm going to bring this meeting to a close if we're going to continue to argue like this. The committee and how it's working, Ms. Chair.
I want to bring
free to call me.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're wasting these people's time.
Come on.
You know what?
I
you need to grow up. That's what you need to do. Stop being a showboat. And have some significance. So when she said, I'm one of my lips, is she angry? I'm thinking of charade. No, you come on. You just got finished yelling at me. Now she butts into the statement that I'm making.
You
because
are
she
totally out of order.
What? I am.
Totally
is Melissa out of order?
I think we're going to bring this meeting
well,
to a
bring
close.
It to a close. Because this crap needs to stop. All of these excuses. You make commitments. Stick to them.
You cannot.
That's why we're having problems with Big Bible now. All these stupid excuses.
No,
you know what?
Itself.
You need to be fair. You are not fair.
Yes,
you're not fair.
This is
you're one-sided in your perception of things.
This is unacceptable.
Point of order. I think on the page, on the two-page document, we have a resolution that I think with our funds there, we can reduce it from 12 to 5.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, that was the kind of outburst toward the end. And I want to make our listeners, international and domestic, very clear on this. The lady that was vocal, in my eyes, was absolutely correct. The Council of Minnesotans, you know, have virtually stood stagnant for years. The other two people you hear in there is, again, Martha, the assistant city attorney, and also adding and chiming in was Miss Lissa Jones, who also stood up and said, before I could get the camera and the tape recorder out, that I'm going to have to step outside before I say something to hurt your feelings, which is what she said to this lady there, just a very frustrated, hardworking person who has some challenges. And we have another phone call. Hold on. Yes, you're on point. Can I help you?
Hi, I have a question. This is Denise. My question is, what exactly does the Council on Black Minnesotans do? I've never really heard about them in the community. What do they actually do? And where did their board come from? Who picked this board that is so upset, you know, upsetting and unsettling to the community?
Well, Mr. Allen, I think that's a good one. Do you have, why don't we call it up on the computer, the mission statement of the Council on Black Minnesotans, and then we can answer the questions of the caller?
Okay. I'm going to call that up right now. And I am sorry, Mr. Edwards, I should have had that up a minute ago. But it's just, it's very funny that you should ask that, ma'am. The purpose here, while the computer is clicking here, the mission of the Council of Black Minnesotans, CBM, is to ensure that the needs of the Minnesotans of African descent are clear to the policymakers who impact their well-being by providing equal protection of the law and guaranteeing that this community receives and has access to state services and programs. That is their mission statement below with last year's 2010 Martin Luther King Day event, after still being advertised 278 days after the event.
Wow. You know, okay, so what about all the different development and different things going on in North Minneapolis? What type of impact have they had on North Minneapolis in getting things done over there?
We can answer that question pretty quickly and decisively. Nothing. Basically, and we'll be getting into that a little later on in the program. There's some excellent questions coming in. Because of the political, first of all, you also asked the question, who appoints? The governor, the setting governor, appoints the Council on Black Minnesotans and with the concurrence of the legislature. And so these people were all appointed by the outgoing governor, Tim Pawlenty. One of the things that's disturbing, there is a board member who has been in the forefront of trying to tell us in the community that this has been going on for a long time, and he has been basically marginalized and disrespected and et cetera. The appointments, the terms, actually, of the members who are on this video, their terms actually expired on January 3rd. And Lucky Rosebaum has raised some serious questions to the legislature and the governor in the last 40-some hours about the fact that this was an illegal meeting on the 3rd, as well as actions such as the selection of Randolph Staton as the speaker, probably were illegal, as well as even the decision to uninvite Staton and to bring on Robin Hickman, who I've known for many years, as the keynote, that a lot of the actions of the council are taking place in a questionable vacuum. That includes the fact that they've probably been acting illegally. Now, understand that Mr. Allen read what the mission of the Council on Black Minnesotans is supposed to be. The issue that Mr. Allen has played for the listening and viewing audience was an issue dealing with something crucially important to the African-American community, as we said earlier, mental health. And this white paper dealt with the fact that there is significant discrimination going on within the healthcare, mental health care community, and particularly at a couple of facilities. I'm afraid that the statements by Lisa Jones with respect to, I don't want to hurt your feelings, has to do with a very vicious rumor that has been put out in the last 48 hours since Mr. Allen's news organization broke and made available the video, a very scathing and almost personal attack on members of the Council on Black Minnesotans. Now, the Reverend Dr. Jerry McAfee said in this morning's edition of Minneapolis Star Tribune that the council needs to be reorganized. We, some of us, have joined with Lucky in indicating that at this very hour, the Council on Black Minnesotans needs to be placed in receivership. and the legislature needs to hold public hearings with respect to what they've been doing. You asked a very, very good question. I was going to kind of tell a joke, and I guess I'll go ahead with it. You said, what do they do? The only thing that I've known them to do over the last 20 years is travel and stay at hotels and motels.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Excuse me, can I say something in here real quick?
Okay, go ahead, Mr.
Yeah, you know, we have Mr. Montoya holding while we need to honor the fact that he has been waiting.
Go ahead, Mr. Montoya.
Well, thank you very much. I've done a lot of work in the community, and I've been around a lot of the issues, and I haven't seen the Council of Black Minnesotans come in and support some of the crucial issues that we've had in the community, such as police-community relations and things of that nature. But I think that my whole thing is this. The organization, given its mission statement, should be by the people for the people. I believe that there should be a process in place where the community says who is going to represent them, be it an election process or something other. But we need to have something in place that gives the community the opportunity to speak their opinion on who represents them. And I don't believe that's currently in place. That's number one. Number two, I think that there needs to be an extensive review of their bylaws, organizational structure, and review of exactly what it is they've been doing for the funding that they've been receiving via the state and other organizations for potential outcomes that are positive for the community and impact the community. And when I say impact, I don't mean indirect impact. I mean, what are they actually doing that's directly impacting families? Now, this issue about the mental health report, which was prepared for their use, that they actually sanctioned or okayed for this lady to go ahead and to prepare, I believe that the document had been read. I believe that the document had been read, scrutinized, and reviewed. And I believe that the findings in the document are being suppressed. I believe that this whole report is being suppressed because once it goes through the board and the board approves the report, then it actually becomes a functional document. And I believe that suppression at that level is trying to hold that back. And I see that as being very problematic. I seen on Facebook this morning that Reverend McAfee said that he will no longer support the current Council on Black Minnesotans, and I, too, will no longer support the current way that it's structured, unless the structure changes. Now, I heard Mr. Edwards say something about receivership. I believe that that's totally appropriate given the circumstances in this.
Exactly.
And then that way we can have more inclusion from the community, and the community can be involved in what's going on over there. We need to find out what's going on over there. Our civil rights departments are pretty much in shambles, and we have nothing there. So we need to have something in place that is by the people and for the people.
All right. All right.
All right.
Montoya, we appreciate your comments. Well taken, and I have to say very timely, and particularly for a person such as myself that was very much in the battle to create the Council on Black Minnesotans as a civil rights activist. I'm so disheartened by what I see happening, and I think that placing the Council of Black Minnesotans in receivership and also ending or suspending administrative responsibility for the office where folks are making nice salaries and getting nice benefits is in order. And I think that Lucky Rosebaum, who has been really the only committee member per se who has raised questions, I would call all of your attentions, and I think, Mr. Montoya, you remember this, that Lucky wrote a series of articles in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder a couple years ago about some very negative things that were done against the interest of the Somali community in Rochester, Minnesota, particularly starting with the schools, and then when a couple of Somalis were killed by white vigilantes in Rochester, the council pretended under its administrative leadership of dealing with the issue, did not do it. Lucky exposed the nonfeasance and malfeasance, and people basically spent their time attempting to attack his character. Well, we appreciate your comments, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I just have one more question. Do they have a four-year term? I'm sorry. Are they appointed for 4 years?
They have staggered terms, and I think they're appointed for 2 and 3 years.
Okay.
Who appoints them, Mr. Edwards?
The governor.
The governor.
It's advised.
The governor.
The governor of the state appoints them, and the legislature concurs. In fact, the legislature has, by statute, at least one seat. In fact, for many years, longtime Democratic Senator Linda Berglund sat as the watchdog for the legislature, but I just don't think Linda did a very good job. I think it may have changed. As you said earlier, Mr. Montoya, this has become an organization, though folks still draw their salaries and et cetera, it does nothing for the health and welfare of the African-American here in the state of Minnesota. But to the question of our female caller, the governor of the state appoints the individuals, and as we said, documentation, there's been a sharp exchange of emails in the last 72 hours, clearly shows that the terms were up on January 3rd, and I assume that Governor Mark Dayton is looking at reappointments. But I think, as Mr. Rosenbaum said in the spokesman recorder 2 days ago, that there needs to be a little different flavor, and I think Mr. Montoya is correct. This is for the people and by the people, and the people should be involved in the selection process. In fact, there should be a public interview process. Candidates for positions on the Council of Minnesotans should be required, as others are, even like the position for executive director that takes place no more in Minneapolis, where you'd be required to go out and to at least meet with the community and answer questions. But that doesn't happen anymore, and I don't think that the Council on Black Minnesotans really has ever done that other than the first 2 years that they were in service, if you will. Okay?
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, I have to sign off right now, but I want to thank you for doing the investigative reporting that you're doing on the issue. I think it's outstanding, and I just want to thank you for that and thank you for all the work that you do in the community. But I have to sign off right now, but I will go online later on and listen to the show again.
All right. Thank you
very
sir.
Much.
Is it Denise?
Yes.
Is she still with us,
yes,
Ms. Allen?
Yep.
Denise, any other questions that you have for us on this particular matter?
No, that's it. If I do, I'll call back. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank
you. Well, you might be calling back. Mr. Edwards.
Yes.
Very good assessment of the whole situation there. And it's very interesting that you and Mr. Montoya and the caller, Denise, brought out some very important things about what do they do, where are they at. Now, I need to position this because what we operate off here on Point, the Minneapolis story, Black Focus, IBNN, USA Radical Black, is documented factual information.
Okay? National resources to all of our people that are in place. Yes.
Okay. But before I get into this piece, it's going to be a mind blower here, Mr. Edwards.
All right.
I want to say that people have called me and contacted me over the last 72 hours and says, you know, and these are the bougie Black Minnesotans, why are you tearing down the community? You're just tearing down the community.
Right.
You need to build it up. Now, this is exactly what Ms. Lisa Jones told me, who is the secretary of the Council on Black Minnesotans. And also, along with Lester Collins and Assistant City Attorney Martha, are in control about $250,000 in grant money.
Yes, they are.
Yes. And so what I want to ask for today is a audit or a list of grants that are grants they awarded, and you will see a trend in those grants that they're giving out. They want to give them to people they feel comfortable with. Also, part two, Mr. Edwards, I'm actually looking at some paperwork right now that I actually ordered and received it overnight. You remember the tobacco settlement case?
Yes, sir. The Cerisi Law Firm handled that and made hundreds of millions of dollars in profit. And there were all kinds of things that were supposed to be done, and some of that was supposed to be coordinated through the so-called ethnic councils, including the Council on Black Minnesotans. Please reveal.
Yes. Okay. Right now, I'm looking at quite a few people online. Some of those people are of African-American descent. Some of them are Hispanic. Some of them are Caucasian. For my brothers and sisters out there, When was the last time you heard anything addressing non-smoking in the black community?
Absolutely.
We're hearing crickets now because they haven't done their due diligence in accordance with that grant. But yet, some people got money off it. They're working, so it hasn't happened.
It's for 30.
Third of all, let me just go down and pull this up real quick in the other studio. I'm looking at a financial audit from 2005 to 2008 for the Council of Black Minnesotans. The thing is, the funny thing is, or the serious thing is, excuse me, every one of the conclusions say the Council on Black Minnesotans did not have adequate internal controls over its payroll process to ensure that it paid employees accurately, recorded payroll transactions properly, and complied with certain payroll policies and procedures. Except for payroll, the council's internal controls were not accurate to ensure that.
So, right. Now, this was the legislative auditor, Mr. Noble. And, in fact, about 4 years ago, the council was reprimanded by the legislative auditor, who is a very, very powerful entity in this state. This is for our national and international listeners. Mr. Allen and his news organization, being joined by the National Research Institute on yesterday, as we understand it, in an electronic consultation with the state legislative auditor, have found out that certain reports, financial reports, have not been filed in a duly and statutory manner. Is that correct, Mr. Allen?
That is absolutely correct. And one of the things also here that I see, Mr. Edwards, it's a messy subject altogether, because you have a group of people, and I'm going to continue back on that Tuesday night meeting because I have a couple more points to make on that.
Okay.
Before we go into more documented information for our listeners, international and domestic, you know, that Tuesday night meeting, and you could chime in too on this, Mr. Edwards. Tuesday night meeting, I went up. Because, you know, the city of Minneapolis had their 2010 disparity report released on October 21st, which basically said that the main reason why African-Americans in the city of Minneapolis or people of color aren't getting jobs on construction sites, on just in general, was discrimination and racism. Okay, and I just summarized it in a nutshell. I went up to the assistant city attorney, Martha Holton Demick, and I said, you know what, have you presented this to the Council on Black Minnesotans? This seems like a cause that should have been spearheaded by you guys to go in and maybe look at the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, consult with them, work with them in some way to correct this huge disparity that says African Americans are paid 40% less than everybody else. The Hispanics make more money than us.
Yes.
And her excuse was, well, you know, I'm in the criminal division, and I don't get a chance to see that stuff.
Let me cut in on that right at this particular point. In our pre-program discussions and staff meetings that we have, I indicated to my associate, Mr. Allen, that I now feel compelled. A complaint, not formal in nature, but a complaint as it pertains to the issues of principle, have been made to the City Council with respect to a very peculiar set of circumstances involving the current chair, who is also an assistant city attorney. There are some other issues that Mr. Allen and myself will be touching on in the next 49 minutes of this program. The chair has apparently been involved in discussions with respect to what issues over the last couple of years, and it goes back to the call earlier, made to us with respect to what does the council do if it does anything. Well, one of the things it does, it has been comfortably held captive by the Democratic machine with respect to what issues should not be raised. On the issue of the disparity study, we now find out that the Minority Contractors Association has agreed that it will not testify at the public hearing on the 24th of February. This was done as an outgrowth of consultation with the Minneapolis City Attorney's Office. Issues such as the one, sir, that you have just raised about African-Americans receiving 40% less in salaries and et cetera, which is a legal question. The Department of Labor, the Federal Department of Labor, has expressed some concern based on inquiry made by Mr. Allen, myself and others, Mr. Lenny Chisholm and others, and there possibly will be later on this spring an investigation of this particular pattern and practice. But the chairwoman of the Council on Black Minnesotans has aided and abetted in the obstruction and suppressing, as Mr. Montoya pointed out, first of all, of situations that by statute the Council on Black Minnesotans were to review and to report out. In fact, I don't know the last time that that the Council on Black Minnesotans and its very well-paid administrative staff have actually even demanded nor made a specific series of reports to the Minnesota legislature. And so consequently, they are almost a non-entity. And so the point that you are making, there are serious questions, some very legal. That's the reason that we joined with at least one member of the Council on Black Minnesotans who has been raising this issue for many years. The operation of the Council of Minnesotans needs to be suspended as of Tuesday morning.
Exactly.
The administrative, the director and administrative staff need to be suspended with pay. You know, we're not doing like they do, and that is taking money out of the pockets of the community. The Reverend Dr. Jerry McAfee was absolutely on point with respect to his call for the suspension of the operation. I know that what IBNN, National Research Institute, and others have uncovered already does rise to the threshold of the suspension of the operation of the Council on Black Minnesotans and for a full-scale legislative inquiry, if you will, as they call it. And I just think it has to happen because the $250,000 that the council has been sitting on and paying out to their friends and others and probably rises to the threshold of a state grand jury investigation. Now, the Ramsey County attorney, who, of course, is a Democrat, will probably not initiate that. Unfortunately, the U.S. attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota will probably not do that. But if there's enough information uncovered, Mr. Allen, by the legislative auditor, Mr. Noble, and by a committee of inquiry of the state legislature, maybe we will get a grand jury investigation of some significant abuses that have been going on.
Yeah. Exactly, and I'm glad that you put that on the table, Mr. Edwards, because you said it eloquently when you said that, you know, Assistant City Attorney Martha has been given her marching orders on to what address and not to address. So I actually asked her, I said, okay, her response to me on the disparity report was, well, I work in the criminal division. And I says, well, Martha, there was a guy killed by Minneapolis police, a black man, on the sixth floor of the YMCA. We have four more brothers either shot or tased to death by the Minneapolis police. Wouldn't that be something that the Council on Black Minnesota should address, Miss Criminal Division? You know, it just didn't make any sense. And she had nothing to say, of course.
Now, let me say on that particular point, because the caller identified as Mr. Montoya.
Yes.
Raised an interesting question, and he gave an interesting piece of historical information for our domestic and international audience. Mr. Montoya was a member of the Police Community Relations Council, which was created, was forced upon the city by the Department of Justice. And it was either accept that or the Department of Justice was talking in terms of placing the Minneapolis Police Department in receivership. In 2005. Mr. Montoya well remembers that one of the things that happened in 2005, 2006, even late 2004, the PCRC attempted to get, in fact, Mr. Collins did come, if I vaguely remember, one meeting. And by the way, I was the co-chair of the PCRC. Mr. Collins refused to take a look at any of the police misconduct, police brutality cases, including the very high-profile Dominic Felder case, which, by the way, the city is now appealing that $1.8 million judgment. And, by the way, the chair of the of the Council on Black Minnesotans was very involved in encouraging Jim Moore, the lead attorney, in her office, to go ahead with that, and played a very interesting role in undermining the attempts by the family back in 2006, 2007, in attempting to get this case into the courts.
Okay. Mr. Edwards, I don't mean to cut you off.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
We've been waiting for this caller. Hey, caller, you're live on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello. I hear you live. Who's calling?
This is Rosella.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm well, and yourself?
Okay, you're live on the air right now, and we'd like you to tell our listening audience who you are and a little narrative about. I know you might have been listening to a little bit of the show, but just for full disclosure, because we want to be fair across the board, tell people who you are, what you do, and what you're a part of so they can get an understanding that this is part of our conversation here.
Okay, my name is Rosella Collins-Porsche, and I do a couple of things, actually. I'm a psychotherapist. And I'm also a member of the Council on Black Minnesotans. Mm. I have not had an opportunity to listen to your show. I just actually called in now. And I was calling in to actually just listen. But since I'm actually now, I don't know what I should actually say. But that's who I am.
Okay. And for people that are listening, I played the two recordings of the events on Tuesday night. And I narrated by saying that you were absolutely in the right by telling them that, you know, you keep creating templates and don't act on them, nothing's getting done. And I'm paraphrasing there. And I sense your frustration. And, I mean, I don't know what you can say and what you can't say. I don't want to get you in any trouble or anything with those guys. But, you know, there's a serious issue inside that organization, and it's not addressing anything that has to do with Black Minnesotans. Would you agree?
Well, I really don't want to speak to what has not been done, but what I will say is this. I view my appointment with the council as an honor to serve the African-American community. And I'm new to the council. I was only appointed this year. And since I've been at the council, I've had some very it's been kind of difficult to get things moving along. But I am hopeful that things are going to change. I look forward to salvaging the council to keep it in place for the African-American community because, as we all know, we have lots of problems. And I see the council as a vehicle for getting many of those problems solved. And I expect, or I plan wholeheartedly, to work hard to make sure that as much as can get done will be gotten done on my watch. So I'll just say that. A lot of the controversy that I hear now about the council, I was completely unaware that many of those things were in existence. But you know what? The truth is the truth, and you cannot run away from that. But I can tell the community, and I want the community to have faith in me and hold me accountable, that I plan to do all that I can do within my power and within the power that God has given to me to serve the community well.
Okay. Mr. Edwards?
I appreciate her call. I understand as a person who has served on civil rights commissions and including the State Human Rights Department many years ago, I can understand the legal sensitivity. In fact, I'm going to respect that. In fact, what I'm going to do is wait until she goes off the air so that Martha and others will not attempt to badger her and try to force her resignation, if you will. But I'm going to tell about a series of emails in which it was clear that she was absolutely lied to as it pertains to the white paper and the reports and et cetera. And others were lied to in a public meeting just this past Tuesday. I applaud her commitment to the doctrine, if you will. I applaud her commitment to the mission of the Council on Black Minnesotans, and maybe she can be one of those that can be looked at if there is a decision, because one of the things we all need to understand, this legislature, which is very conservative in its thinking and et cetera, can eliminate the Council on Black Minnesotans at any time, particularly if the legislative auditor comes forward with the information that they have compiled against the Council on Black Minnesotans and its administrative staff over the last 8 or 9 years. The conservative legislature would have no problem eliminating and voiding the existence of the Council of Black Minnesotans. And we do not here in the state of Minnesota have the political clout, unfortunately, to be able to resist that. And we will have to be dependent on a indication of concern and taking the necessary corrective action to make the council what the council should have been when many of us took to the hallways of the state capitol over 30 years ago to talk about the importance of the creation of such a body. But I deeply respect what she has said, what she has gone through, and let's just hope that we can salvage and save the Council on Black Minnesotans.
Okay. Well, hey, thank you for your call, man. All right, Mr.
Yeah, she's already gone. Okay. Oh, let me just say this. When the issue came up Tuesday night, as you have reported and you have some video coverage of it, about the position paper and the fact, was it given to State Representative Jeff Hayden, who is one of four African Americans now in the Minnesota legislature, three in the House, one in the Senate. She was specifically told, and many of you were witnesses to it, and it is now reflected in email exchanges on yesterday. She and others were told that State Representative Hayden had received the document, was critiquing it, etc. Representative Hayden has sent an email back in which he indicates, first of all, he hasn't talked to Director Lester Collins in months, and that there had been no discussion with respect to the document, but that he was now in receipt. The document had finally, the position paper, the white paper, had finally been given to him. And his specific words, Mr. Allen, I think you would agree, we can call it up on the computer at any time. He specifically indicated that his senior staff was now reviewing it, critiquing it, and would be making some recommendations to him. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. So what is also troubling is that a administrative person would, in fact, misrepresent an outright lie to a board member with respect to the custody, the chain of custody of a very, very important document dealing with mental health and et cetera. And now we find ourselves being able to identify, and there are electronic intercepts, people need to know this, in which individuals who apparently are working with a couple of the individuals on the Council of Black Minnesotans to slander the caller that just called in, as well as others.
Yes. Yes, there is. There are phone calls coming in just to try to dismantle. But that's what happens when you Mr. Edwards, these people, they've been sitting on the Council on Black Minnesotans, have been every year sitting on a lot of money, grant money, that could make decisions for different people. And what has happened is you have, I was at the meeting Tuesday out of Lisa Jones' mouth. Her and Mr. Lester Collins are the ones that sit in the chair and decide who gets this grant money.
Yes.
They've taken care of the African American History Museum, you know,
mm-hmm.
as they should. They're probably going to get ready to take care of it again. I mean, taking care of by giving them money. I mean, I'm not saying that's good, bad, or indifference, but this is a council that virtually works in the dark, and in some cases, does not work toward the betterment of the Black Minnesotans at all whatsoever, and has remained silent. And then with the assistant city attorney, Chairman Martha, you know, like you said, Mr. Edwards, she's been given her marching orders on what to address and what not to address. And so what happens is we get this vacuum of nothingness from them.
That's absolutely correct. Mr. Allen, let us do this again. Let us give the number that we encourage callers, who, and we've had some good ones within the first hour, well, for 45 minutes, 47 minutes. Could you just give the number again?
Sure. Sure, that toll-free number, it's toll-free, 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288.
Let me just say this. Over the last year, there has been monitoring of the program that is on radio station KMOJ-FM here in the city of Minneapolis, in which one of the individuals you've been talking about has a program dealing with public affairs. I can well remember, because you just mentioned an agency that has received a significant amount of money as a part of the girlfriend relationship. And I well remember that program. There was never any disclosure by the host that they were a member not only of the Council of Black Minnesotans, but that they were on the allocation committee.
Yeah, yeah. Not a word out of Ms. Jones over the airways that she was part of the Council of Black Minnesotans. But, you know, it would turn into be a really good positioning piece for her, because she had to tell someone that she was part of an allocation committee. And, you know, I would like I said, Mr. Edwards, I'd really like to see the report of where the money went.
Well, that's the reason I think that we are joining with the board member, Lucky Rosenblum, who is specifically now asking for the legislative auditor to begin an immediate examination. As we said earlier in this program, is that in consultation with the legislative auditor as well as state auditor yesterday, we found out that there are statutory violations by the Council on Black Minnesotans. There are documents, financial reports, and statements that have not been filed, if you will. This caller, our last caller, indicated something interesting. Though she is a member of the Council of Black Minnesotans, there are many of these issues she was not aware of, and that is the reason that we now find ourselves, and we refer again to the copyrighted story in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. It wasn't anything put together by the black bloggers, if you will. The Reverend Jerry McAfee, president of the Minnesota State Baptist Conference, has called for a boycott, if you will, of the MLK activities, which I just think we just can't do that. But also he has pointed out that there was a discussion which had to do with Randolph Stanton, who was uninvited from participating as the keynote speaker on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm now hearing from that faction that supported Mr. Rosenblum and Mr. Belfield, who is also the chair of the Civilian Review Authority, Police Civilian Review Authority here in Minneapolis, that they were never told by Mr. Collins that he was entering into a contractual relationship with Randolph Stanton, who was a former legislator who was censured by the legislature in 1986, as was pointed out by the Reverend Jerry McAfee, for conduct unbecoming and fraud and other things. But it appears, as you picked up on Tuesday, you were at the meeting, but as we now are hearing in the news stories and et cetera, that this was kind of done in a vacuum, that the invitation was extended without consultation with the full Council on Black Minnesotans. Has that basically been your take, Mr. Allen?
That is absolutely correct. When I was in the meeting and they were talking about, you know, who the keynote speaker was, which would be Monday, Ms. Robin Hickman, the woman sitting next to me didn't know. She goes, well, we're not having that other speaker, referencing the Honorable Reverend Randy Stanton.
Correct.
And so it was shady altogether. But, Mr. Edward, I just came upon the Honorable Premier Baptist Minister, Reverend Jerry McAfee's statement here, his original statement that never made it to the Star Tribune. And part of transparency and full disclosure, I'd like to read it. It's a statement on the Council of Black Minnesotans Events Monday.
I think that that's absolutely appropriate. I understand that press release and declaration was issued by the Reverend Dr. Jerry McAfee at approximately 2:02 yesterday afternoon. Please share it with our domestic and international audiences, please.
Okay. The Honorable Baptist Premier Minister, Reverend Jerry McAfee, writes, "My brothers and sisters, I regretfully share with you that I cannot support the Council on Black Minnesotans Martin Luther King program this Monday. The board has to go. For they do not represent the masses of African Americans. This has nothing to do with Robin, for she is an awesome person. But the boot-licking Uncle Toms and Aunt Janes must go, and therefore I can take it back and will add more to it. End of statement.
And this was the Reverend Jerry McAfee, the minister of New Salem.
And you know what? We have a
church.
Mr. Edwards,
and president of the Minnesota Black Baptist State Convention, a very powerful position, very powerful ecumenical leader.
Yes, you're live on the air with On Point. Hello. Okay, they hung up.
They hung up on somebody peeking in and didn't realize they were on the air. Again, we encourage the calls. We have approximately 58 minutes. Is that correct, Mr. Allen?
We're actually down, Mr. Edwards. Time has been flying. I'm looking at the clock in the studio here. We have 34 minutes.
34?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're absolutely correct. I was thinking it's approximately 4:55. And so we have 34 minutes. I'm sorry. I'm looking at another computer. Absolutely. We have 34 minutes.
You had me looking at the engineer like he was crazy. But yeah, we're fine.
Yes. And the number is 1-877-572-4288.
And caller, feel free to call back. We're here. We'll take your call as soon. I mean, I'll break in and take your call. We've been talking a lot, Mr. Edwards, about the Council on Black Minnesotans and all these things going up. There's a name that comes to mind. I think Lazenberry. Is that the name or
Colonel Lazenberry,
the
highest ranking African American ever to enjoy that rank in the Minnesota State Highway Patrol. Colonel Lazenberry, a born in Minnesota, lifelong member, one of the great success stories of the state patrol here, but also a figure who represented by virtue of his high command position. In fact, he should have been the head of the State Highway Patrol, but Minnesota politics dictated they weren't going to have an African American as the head of the Highway Patrol. But he obtained the rank of colonel. A couple of years ago, he met with myself as co-chair of the Police Community Relations Council to ask us to work in a recruitment effort that he was single-handedly moving, if you will, doing everything that had necessarily be done. In fact, I just pulled out the materials that he shared with us. We tried to work with him for a period of time. Actually, unfortunately, members of the Pawlenty administration and the State Patrol itself were undermining. But one of the things that Colonel Lazenberry did was that he asked early on the Minnesota Council, or the Council on Black Minnesotans, to bring this issue forward to the legislature, in which the council, by statute, has more immediate and quicker access to the legislature than the average citizen, including someone of the status of Colonel Lazenberry.
I'm sorry, Mr. Edwards, I have to cut in. That caller did call that.
All right, let's get him.
Yes, you're live on point. Mass is calling.
Yeah, this is the Brother Conscious James. How you doing there?
Okay, can you hold on 1 second, sir? We're not going to put you on hold, but I just want Mr. Edwards to finish his thought, okay?
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
So what happened was that the council never followed up. And what happens here in Minnesota, we now have basically a lily-white state highway patrol, though it's never been any more than two African-Americans, no more than three, as best we can determine historically. In fact, for a long time, Colonel Lazenberry was the only African-American starting out as a young trooper. There was a meeting with then-Public Safety Director Richard Stanning a number of years ago, in which at that time, Public Safety Director Stanning, who is now the sheriff of the most populous county here in the state of Minnesota, Hennepin County, indicated to then-state representative Keith Ellison that he was concerned about the absence of African-Americans, and, in fact, he had a lot of respect for Colonel Lazenberry. And, again, the Council on Black Minnesotans was identified as the entity that should have come into play to carry that proposition, refused to do it, and so, consequently, we are looking now at a state police force that has no African-Americans.
And that just also, Mr. Edwards, that adds to the the University of Minnesota.
Now you got to wait until I get through.
Sir, we can hear you. You're
yeah, we can hear you talking. But let's get this caller on and see what he's going to say.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
I'd just like to commemorate you two nice gentlemen for doing a nice job, and I'd like for you to keep the work. I noticed you guys got everybody on the run now, and really, like you said, there's true leadership to be found right about at this particular time, because you guys have put everybody on burn notice. Everybody's on burn notice up here now. Everybody's either under a rock, hiding, trying to come to some new program. And when you see them in public, everybody's got this crazy look in their face like they don't know which way to go. It's like they keep up the good work, keep the pressure on, and don't let up. And
all right,
get
thank
through.
Thank you, James. Appreciate it, sir. Okay.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Right. Okay. That is one of the best narratives and illustrations of what you and I and others have been saying that we see. Apparently now the general public is beginning to see the same thing. I've never seen as many so-called leaders as I have in the last number of weeks, particularly in light of another event that took place, and don't want to take away from the Council on Black Minnesotans, but the collapse of City Inc. And as we first reported last week, Mr. Allen, on Monday, actually, City Inc. Collapsed, closed its doors, and put 30 employees in the street.
Yeah, they sure did. We originally, the National Research Institute and the Independent Business Network, we actually broke that story on January 5th.
Yes, sir.
And again, we were both attacked as, oh, they don't know what they're talking about, all this and all that. And, you know, not until it gets into the mainstream newspaper, and I'm not even playing the race card with it and say the white mainstream newspaper. I guess I just did. I'm sorry, y'all. But the thing is that if you're on the ground floor, Mr. Edwards, as you and I are, and we see this stuff just coming up, we go to these people and we say, hey, this is getting ready to happen. And they look at us like we're knuckleheads. And then it happens, like that last caller said. They walk around with their heads down, with the funny looks on their face, and don't know what to say.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that happens with something like what happened with City Inc., when a power broker such as Mr. Easter finds himself in the unemployment lines, you know, sometimes wives file for divorce and put you out the house and et cetera, and you know, you're no longer the breadwinner and you're no longer the darling of their lives. I'm hearing funny things about some relationships and et cetera that aren't going too well either, and some folks who are very unhappy with their opposite numbers. So let's hope that something be done. By the way, one of the things that you and I have discussed, and we've kind of forwarded this back to our friends at the Star Tribune, who we also know are peeking in, I find it amazing that last week in three separate stories, as they talked about 37 African-American students who have nowhere to go to be educated, if you will, Stan Allen and them saying that they were trying to find some spot for them. And yet in the same article, the Star Tribune and the leadership of City Inc. at that time were reporting their merger with the Minneapolis Urban League that allegedly had 110 students at an alternative high school in South Minneapolis. And I was always wondering why those students were not automatically transferred to the City Inc. Southside facility.
You know what? And that was on the top of my mind also, Mr. Edwards, because here's what we have here. We're going to be breaking a story next week. Myself and the IBNN and the National Research Institute, because we have schools closing in the black community from flagship organizations that you haven't heard about in the newspaper. You guys never, our listeners, domestic and international, you never heard about the bus, the Urban League school bus being set afire in the parking lot. That never made it to the newspaper.
Absolutely. You know,
there's something going on here with the Minneapolis Urban League and the City Inc. connection and the school in South Minneapolis and the elementary school in North Minneapolis. We're actually taking our cameras over next week and attempting to deliver a letter to the Minneapolis Urban League Elementary School. The results are going to surprise you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me also say that this is a terrible situation here for the African-American community, what has happened with City Inc. and the small number. At one point, when they opened up and started their school year this September. They allegedly had 90 students, and we don't know where they're at. So then they showed up with a number of 37, if you will. We've also found out that that organization is another organization that has not filed the necessary financial papers with the state of Minnesota. And the word is that Star Tribune is now working on a story dealing with Mr. Allen, a $600,000 loan that was taken out in February and quote-unquote March of 2009. Over the opposition of the then chair, Mr. Bork, who is also the director of community affairs for the Council of Greater Minneapolis Churches, he immediately resigned. His letter, I understand, of resignation is rather interesting. He immediately resigned. The word is now that $600,000 loan that cannot be repaid was at the heart and center of the closing of the City Inc. within a period of 4 or 5 days. And an examination has taken place also with the sale of property of City Inc.'s Southside facilities, and we will be reporting it at the appropriate time here on Point. You'd be surprised who the real estate agent was at the time of that transaction and how much money was passed back under the table.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And also, speaking of things closing in North Minneapolis, on September 1st, you know, Mr. Edwards, we had the founder and executive director of Correctional Transition Services, Inc., Mr. Paul Casterman, to come on live, to come on live and do an interview because his board of directors came in and had him removed by Minneapolis police.
Yes.
And just let me give you a little background. This is a transitional service agency that did a lot of good work in North Minneapolis. It was almost duplicated. Well, it didn't duplicate, but we talked about a minute ago about 180 degrees, and I want to keep that on your mind because I want to get back to that, Mr. Edwards, that 180 degrees.
Right.
But, from 2007 to 2009, revenue for CTSI grew from $142,000 to $655,000, and in 2008 and 2009, each year generating a surplus of $90,000. Okay.
Okay.
This group of board of directors came in who have been absentee board members, kicked the founder and executive director, Mr. Paul Custerman, out of the building on last Friday. They had to lay off staff, and it looks like their doors will be closing.
And I understand they have gone through, according to reliable sources, we are now going more formally. We understand that in that period of about 5 months, they went through $650,000. Now, this figure is not to be confused with the $600,000 we just talked about as it pertains to City Inc., but that Mr. Caston's organization, he was forced out. Minneapolis police were used to facilitate this. A different board of individuals strongly tied into the Democratic Party here in Minneapolis came in, and I understand that they went through $650,000 in 5 months, and you're correct. The organization on yesterday officially closed their doors.
Yes. Yeah. It's like if you don't play well with Councilmember Don Samuels and that group in North Minneapolis, you know, they got it out for you. And let me give you kind of my analogy. We were talking about the Council of Black Minnesotans. Imagine having 10 Don Samuels in one room. That's your Council on Black Minnesotans. So Black Minnesotans will get virtually zero assistance from that council. But getting back on point, I just wanted to throw that in there. CTSI is, you know, I've talked with Mr. Custerman, and I told him, I says, I don't know what we can do. You know, the 180 degrees, Mr. Edwards, was talking about merging with the City Inc. And, I had called Ms. Sarah Walker to talk to her regarding, you know, City Inc.'s getting ready to close. And once I said that, I think she dropped the phone. She was in shock. Merging with CTSI probably would have been a great fit for her. But from what Mr. Custerman has said and some of his comments, that these people are hell-bent on closing the organization. During the months of September, approximately 30 clients were discharged. There was no follow-ups. The urine screens weren't maintained. I mean, the therapy, all the stuff that Mr. Kusserman had in place was just not, you know, just not happening.
It was, as I understand it, it was dismantled.
Yes, yes.
And it was dismantled for the purpose of plundering the organization to the tune of $650,000.
Yeah. Two staff persons now conduct one group at approximately $75 an hour versus $40 an hour. Mr. Kusserman was there. They used approximately $400 spent on the staff appreciation meals to include a Christmas party paid for with public funding. This had continued despite warning from the CTSI accountant to reduce their spending. And so the organization had paid approximately $40,000 in legal fees, contesting the founder's copyright claim on the program model, a lawsuit filed by the former program manager, and to defend the organization against him against unemployment claims. So they really went after this guy, Mr. Edwards, tooth and nail.
I imagine, I mean, kind of tongue-in-cheek, though, it's not anything to make levity of. I imagine that when you're talking in terms of having your eye on a target of ripping off $650,000, I can understand the vigor that was used. And it was, you know, very clever to use the Minneapolis Police Department to facilitate his extrication, if you will, when they removed him. And we would encourage any of our listeners to call up on demand the program in September in which we had Mr. Kusserman on, and Mr. Allen, who knew the program extremely well, much better than I did, I thought did an excellent job of examining him, and I thought that he was very candid and transparent in his comments with respect to what was at play. And lo and behold, On the 14th of January 2011, unfortunately, his predictions have come to fruition. The organization has gone under.
Yeah, and you can listen to that show by going to On Demand and listening to the podcast from September 4th, 2010. The interview was with Mr. Kusserman there regarding CTSI, and it's advertised as such, and that's free to download and share with your friends, families, and coworkers.
Right. By the way, the organization that you talked about earlier, the African American Family, that has become a quite a profitable organization. In fact, Ms. Jones, her salary is what, around $114,000?
Yeah. The latest 990s IRS, you know, public information that I can get for the African American Family Services was 2008, courtesy of GuideStar.org. And I would suggest to our listeners, just real quick before I get into that, Mr. Edwards, that our listeners, if you want to know where some of the money is going, register your account for free, which is basically your email address and a password, with GuideStar.org. And look up any nonprofit in the Twin Cities area, and you can pull up their 990s. But anyway, getting back on point, African American Family Services, executive director receives a salary of $100,000 a year, according to the 2008, plus another $14,701 in extra compensation for a grand total of $114,700.
Okay.
No, and this is the same person that gets on that local radio station and cries, "Soul Sister Number Two," and all this and all that. And it's really funny, Mr. Edwards. I had one of her colleagues called me, a guy by the name of Mr. Alfred Flowers, and the first thing out of his mouth was, "She don't make no $114,000 a year." And I said, "Well, you know what, if you want me to print up the 990s, unless they demoted her within the last 2 years, which I highly doubt, she probably makes more than that."
And by the way, isn't the chairwoman of her board, isn't that the wife of Mr. William English, the headmaster of the now non-functional City Inc. Alternative School?
Yeah, well, the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. Yes, Miss Freddie English is the...
Yes. She is the chair of the board there. Okay, all right. I mean, I just want to try to get a feeling of where we're at, because here's what we're doing at On Point. We're trying to find out why so many organizations, so many of our leaders, as the caller identified, as James pointed out, and I mean, I thought that was very profound and compelling. We're trying to find out here on Point, and in that this is Martin Luther King Month, if you will, we're going to be spending the next couple of weeks, am I correct, Mr. Allen, and really taking an in-depth look at the issues that were not addressed and that our leadership refuses to address, right?
Exactly.
We've already kind of explained the fact that we are aware that on matters dealing with criminal justice, in which African Americans are victims, that when the Council on Black Minnesotans was asked to examine that, investigate, and et cetera, we now find out that a person who is an assistant city attorney in the criminal division was very much in the forefront of blocking any information and any decision to conduct an investigation. This was consistent when Mr. Allen raised the question to Velma Corvell about the death of Mr. Smith, Cornelius Smith, on the sixth floor of the downtown YMCA that Velma Corvell forgot to tell us that she was a member of the Y community board, and in fact served in a very high-ranking position. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, she's the chair of the Y's board. By the way, Ms. Corvell refused to accept a civil rights complaint from Mr. Allen and myself as it pertains to the circumstances surrounding the death of Cornelius Smith. Am I correct, Mr. Allen?
You are correct. She actually flat-out refused. And if for those of you international and domestic listeners don't know who David Cornelius Smith is, he was the African-American male that was a member of the downtown Minneapolis YMCA who was tased to death and actually died on the scene at the YMCA on the sixth floor, and then miraculously was on life support at HCMC.
What was it, 11 days, 9 days?
Yeah, for 9 days, while they can harvest those body parts. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. While they harvested his body parts and misrepresented to the family his actual medical condition. And that's the fact that not only was he brain dead, but for the period of time he was brain dead, it did significant damage. But it did not do damage to the organs that were illegally harvested from his body for sale by the medical examiner in Hennepin County, which is something we do quite a bit here in this county, if you will. All right. What other items do we have? We spent a lot of time on the Council on Black Minnesotans. I was interested. I thought we may have gotten a call from someone who would defend the fact that the council is doing a great job and that there should be no discussion about placing it in receivership, suspending the staff with pay, and et cetera. I find it interesting. There was no one that was able to call to defend that proposition.
Well, Mr. Edwards, as you know, our platforms are very exclusive but inclusive, not to contradict myself, but to say that the information is out there. The general public has the opportunity to call in. They can send you an email at the spokesman for comment on your stories. They can comment on the Minneapolis story. They can send a letter to Black Focus. And I don't know why people have chosen not to do that. They choose to listen carefully. And I'm seeing people in queue that are listening to this show, and I know some of them want to call in. And I'm just going to tell you, I respect your opinion, and if that's your opinion, that's fine. But, you know, there's your opinion, or there's expectations, and the reality is. And on the council, as it pertains to the Council of Black Minnesota, City Inc., CTSI, North Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Urban League, some of the poverty pimps over there, things aren't happening in a business manner the way they should.
Okay? Let me take the opportunity to also do this, particularly for our local audience here. We reported at the top of this program that we were in attendance, though we came in late, but the public is not allowed to really participate with the minority contractors based on their agenda. But I was quite taken back when I was made aware of the fact that the Minority Contractors Association has made a political decision not to give testimony on the 24th of February. Now, Velma Corvell has gone to great lengths, and we are discussing that in a column in Minnesota Spokesman Recorder next week, that Velma Corvell has gone to great lengths, and in fact, we touched on it this week, has gone to great lengths in consultation with Robert Lilligren, Democrat 6th Ward, who is the chair of the Committee of the Whole of the Council and vice chair of the Council, have gone to a great extent, and I really saw it, Mr. Allen, on Thursday afternoon at UROC, where the Association of Minority Contractors, there were 19 of them in attendance. I made the 20th. They have totally capitulated with the help of the city attorney and others that they will give no public testimony. They will not challenge the findings of the disparity study in which the taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis paid $500,000 for, and which took almost 5 years because there was shredding of information, cooking of information and books, and et cetera. And I was just amazed when I heard the head. Is it Carlos? Is that the gentleman I'm talking about?
Carlos.
When Carlos made the statement, he tried to play me by showing me a document which really is the 17-page recommendations, not made by the department, but made by the group NERT out of New York, Austin, Texas, and et cetera. He actually tried to play me that this was the report, and I mean, I really had to correct him. What disturbed me was that I found out and determined that basically none of the minority contractors have read the 300-page report. But then when I began to realize I was looking at people in the room who knew that they themselves were working for and were hiring individuals to allegedly work for them for 40% less than the prevailing wage here in the state of Minnesota as pertains to construction and et cetera, I can understand why Martha and others at the city attorney's office conveyed to Velma Corvell the importance of making sure that there be no testimony. In fact, one of the characters there at the meeting Thursday tried to tell me that there was a public hearing on the 9th of December, him not knowing that I was at the meeting on the 9th of December. It was not a public hearing. What happened, though, they thought that representatives from a Pacific construction company was going to give public testimony, but they could not give that public testimony with me present in the room because I had already asked to be heard, and Councilman Robert Littlegren had indicated to me there would be no public testimony at that particular time. All public testimony would take place on the 24th of February. There will not be any public testimony allowed from individuals in the community that have been put on the white list, if you know what I'm saying. And one of those, by the way, is Mr. Lenny Chisholm.
Mm.
Mr. Chisholm has been identified as persona non grata and will not be allowed to testify.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, that's the way democracy works up here.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
We're down to the last 7 minutes of the show, Mr. Edwards. I'd just like to let people know that Monday is the Martin Luther King Day celebration, or the holiday that we take off work. But a very important piece of Martin Luther King's legacy was economic development for people of color. To this day, we haven't seen that. But then again, we have people that look like us. I mean, black or African-American Americans, whatever you prefer, that have railroads sabotaged, denied, and obstructed that process based on the political slave master plantation mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And what I ask our listeners to be aware of is that it's not a racist or you're not, you know, it's not a racist position, but it's a position that you have to look at these people and you have to look beyond them. Because if you look down the street and your neighbors aren't working and your kids, your teenagers don't have jobs, and you know, there are people that make decisions for us that look like us that could give a damn. They go out to Woodbury, Edina, St. Louis Park, Cottage Grove. After they get off work, they don't spend any money in the community, and that's our problem. We need to fix that and address that to be in conformance with Martin Luther King's last part of his legacy, which was economic development and wealth for people of color.
You're absolutely on point, absolutely correct, and it is a serious fundamental problem, and particularly in light of the fact that the Republicans are now talking in terms of the importance of jobs. Unfortunately, the mechanism is not in place to guarantee the employment of the sons and daughters of the African, if you will. And I just don't know how all of this is going to be accomplished. Mayor R.T. Ryback of this city has declined to indicate what his strategies will be, what he will direct his civil rights department and other departments to do to make sure that doctrine is enforced. In light of the disparity study, which clearly indicates that there is a significant and compelling pattern of discrimination against the African Americans in this city, ranging in all categories, including financing, bonding, insurance, and et cetera. And in fact, on that particular note, we understand, Mr. Allen, that the school district is being confronted with the fact that they did not review the community benefits agreement submitted by a group of African Americans under color of law. And we will be reporting a little bit more in depth on that, as I understand it, over the next couple of weeks. But the Minneapolis Board of Education has refused to even review the community benefits agreement, which talks in terms of significant economic opportunity and inclusion for African Americans in our city.
Yes, exactly.
We have a black superintendent. But we have no blacks on the Board of Education. We have no African Americans on the Board of Education. We have a new Board of Education. In fact, their numbers by charter were increased from 7 to 9. And for the first time in 35 years here in Minneapolis, we have no African Americans on the Minneapolis Board of Education. And the word is that the African American community will have difficulty, though 40% of the students in the Minneapolis public schools are African American, not black or et cetera, but are African Americans. We are now being told that it will be difficult for the African-American concerns to be heard.
Exactly. Well, we do have Hussein Samatar, who is a Somali American, I guess we could say that.
Don't call him American. Call him Somali, because
Somali, that
issue came up at the school board meeting. They said they're tired of being called American Somalis, that they are, if they were born in Somali, they are Somalis who have immigrated to the United States.
I can let him own that. I can let him own
that. Yeah, yes, sir. I can appreciate it based on what these folks will do.
Okay. And, yeah, and so with that said, you know, we have some important things and some things that we have to recognize. And one of the things, Mr. Edwards, one of the things that we always like to do is propose a solution. So with the 3 minutes left before we do all our self-promotion stuff, I think that what should happen, Mr. Edwards, is that we should develop and have a forum with the Council on Black Minnesotans and the community. Have them to sit there in front of their, what would you call that?
Constituents.
Yes. And answer to us on why there is no engagement with the black community, why issues in the black community are not.
You know, engaged. I like that word, Mr. Allen, engagement.
Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely none. Like I said, you know, the proof is in the pudding. An 8-year-old kid, you know, someone told me that, they told me this is kind of a joke. He says, if a 9-year-old knows where a drug dealer is, what makes you think the FBI doesn't? Okay.
Absolutely. And that is absolutely a fact, that is extremely compelling. Use that word again, extremely compelling, as it pertains to what's happening in our communities economically, socially, politically, and otherwise. All right, Mr. Allen, looks like we're down to the last minute and a quarter.
Yes, we are. Well, we'd like to tell people, don't forget to tune in tomorrow. If you live in Minneapolis, tune in to Channel 17 at 5 p.m. That's Channel 17, Minneapolis Television Network, at 5 p.m. for Mr. Edwards' show, Black Focus. And Mr. Edwards, what is your topic tomorrow?
My topic tomorrow will be the massacre in Tucson and the impact that it is having across the country, understanding that we have to tape before the President of the United States addressed the nation. But we talk in great detail, and we also talk about the real history of the assassin.
Right. With that said, don't forget to check out Mr. Edwards' weekly column in the Spokesman Recorder newspaper. It's also online at spokesman-recorder.com. And again, his television show tomorrow at 5 p.m. At Channel 17. And don't forget to check out the Independent Business News Network at IBNNnews.com and USA Radical Black with a new story up. And that's USARadicalBlack.com. Check that out. Your comments welcome. Again, we appreciate everyone tuning in and joining us here for this edition of On Point. We'll be back next week at 4 p.m. And
we'll keep the lights on for you.
Okay? And we hope that we have a safe and peaceful Martin Luther King celebration in St. Paul on Monday. God bless the memory of Martin Luther King, Jr. Mr. Allen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.